Hello, hello. Welcome to Brex and Banter, the show with real talk from the custom LEGO community. I'm your host, as always, Billy. Now, before we get carried away with this week's exciting guest, I have just a few announcements. First, a quick reminder that while listening to the show, you can head on over to our Instagram page where I post a wrap-up every week with the photos relating to what was discussed during the episode. So if you're completely lost or unaware of something, there's a good chance it's on that post. Make sure to go follow the Instagram page. It's Brex_and_banter. Following us on Instagram is a great way to keep updated once a new episode is released, and additionally, it serves as a way for you guys to share it with the community, share it with your friends, post on your story, get it out there, let people know that you're enjoying the podcast. It helps a lot, and I greatly appreciate it. Speaking of being appreciative, let's thank the sponsor of this podcast, Nate's Minifigs. He has an expansive catalog of high-quality resin-printed parts with themes ranging from Star Wars to superheroes to Halo and even some general accessories like pouches, armors, glove tops, etc. He's made backpacks recently, which are super dope. Can't wait to get mine in. He just has a huge variety of products for all your kitbashing needs. There's so much potential. If this sounds interesting to you, I highly suggest you check him out. It's natesminifigs.com. And if you're going to make an order, use promo code BM4 to save 15% off on your order. That's right, 15% off at checkout if you use promo code BM4. Support those who support the podcast and check out natesminifigs.com. With all that said, it was an absolute honor talking to this week's guest. We had a little bit of audio issues, so if there's any weird cuts or jumbles in the conversation, I apologize, but we made it work even though there was about a 15-second delay between me talking and then his response or vice versa. Anyways, he is a critical member of Brick Arm's history and a Flickr legend. If you don't already know who I'm talking about, then you're lost. It is Enigma Badger. So with no further ado, let's just jump right into our conversation. And we're here with the legendary Badger, Enigma Badger from Flickr. How are you doing, man?
Very good. It's the later in the evening for me with a pretty significant time difference. So it's been a fairly long day, but nice to sit here, relax, talk about LEGO, unwind after a long day.
Agreed, agreed. This is an interesting one for me. This is the earliest I've ever had to record, but it's going to be great. I'm refreshed, not tired. It's going to be a good dynamic here. I just want to say it's a real honor to get on, have you on. You were a bit dismissive of the prospect that people would want to hear from you, and that's okay, because even if not, I just want to have a conversation with you and just enjoy shooting the shit about LEGO. So it's a real pleasure to have you here.
That's very, very kind of you to say.
So before we hop into things, I just kind of want to establish who you are for anybody who's not familiar. Would it be fair to call you the right hand of Will? Is that accurate?
No. The best name I came up with myself when I was officially associated with Brick Arms was the Mouth of Brick Arms, as kind of a slight play on the Mouth of Sauron. But I would say Will is, you know, full faculties of his right arm for doing everything that he needs. He doesn't really need me for anything of mechanical use. But I think really my main skills were mainly involved in communications. And I think that's really where, if I have a name for myself, it is certainly based on communications and community outreach, which I'm very proud of.
The public relations is really what you're focusing on. That's right. Okay. And obviously when we say Will, Brick Arms for anyone else who might not know that, but everyone's going to know that. Now, I like to always start at the beginning of your story. And obviously a huge component of that is Brick Arms, but what was your relationship with LEGO before you discovered Brick Arms?
I mean, my relationship with LEGO goes back a couple decades. I mean, I've been a fan of LEGO since, honestly, I can remember. One of the first sets I remember getting was that four classic castle, minifigure pack. It had a knight, it had a peasant, and it had two of the sort of Robin Hood-esque figures. I remember playing with them on the table at a Chili's after we'd spent the day wandering around, you know, a shopping mall and just being really, really excited about these minifigures. And they're really, you know, that takes it back. And there was another one, a space shuttle set. I mean, this is an older one, nothing compared to what they have today, but it came with this really, really cool red scaffolding that, you know, I could use to build a big kind of base like thing. And I built this, you know, big, you know, kind of base, whatever. And it lived on the floor of my bedroom for like a good 2 or 3 years.
Playing in the Chili's really set the scene for everything.
Yeah, it's a really, really distinct memory. I could not tell you why, but I mean, that's, you know, one of the earliest, you know, it's like I said, you know, having those little figures. And this, of course, is way before, you know, anything official Star Wars came from Legos. But I remember, you know, using the little hinge pieces that they used to have that had the little stud connectors on the end, and then using an old school trans red antenna. And I had a Luke Skywalker that was basically an old motorcycle minifig with, you know, just, you know, a random head. And then Darth Vader was basically just an entirely black, you know, minifigure with, you know, a black motorcycle helmet on with a visor. And okay, that's Darth Vader. And so that, you know, it was the kind of makeshift, you know, little kid imagination, but it was fun.
Yeah, no, that's great. Did you ever experience a quote unquote dark age? Moving out of being a child, you know,
when I went to college, actually, I remember one of the first weeks in college, I went out with a group of people and we were just, they were at Target. When I went through like high school and went through whatever else, I mean, it was still, I had brick around the house and sometimes like I would sit down and sometimes I'm just going to build something at random or just for fun. But I mean, bearing in mind at this point, the internet that existed was not really, you know, there wasn't much of what we would understand as the Lego fan community today. And if one existed, I wasn't plugged into it. And, you know, there were no Lego conventions in the US. So there really wasn't even a community for me to fall out of. I would say just kind of felt the natural progression of, yeah, I really enjoy Lego and it's fun to have, you know, the box of it sitting around. And sometimes when I would feel bored, would, you know, open it up and try to build some stuff or do, you know, as a way of relaxing or relieving stress. But I never got into a, ooh, Lego, I don't want to touch that, that's for kids kind of phase.
All right, that's great. So yeah, just sort of the natural progression. Life has new priorities for you. So at what point did you sort of discover that online community or third-party stuff and seeing what everyone else is creating?
So when I went to college, I'm not even sure how I found the website, but I found From Bricks to Boffins in its earlier days, FBTB.
Oh, that's so familiar to me.
Site still is. Yeah, it was a pretty, pretty active site in the, especially in the earlier days of sort of the Lego online fan community. I think that was one of the first message boards that I ever joined. That would have been, probably would have joined it somewhere around like 2000, 2001. And I remember just, you know, they posted a lot of like Lego news. I remember like when the first Lego Kingdoms stuff came out, or yeah, the Kingdoms 1, the sort of, you know, Power Rangery kind of thing. And that was, you know, sort of, you know, all those, you know, grainy catalog images that people would kind of pore over and try to figure out what was what. It was fun days.
So then that kind of launched you into realizing like, hey, there's a lot more people out there interested into this. Was there much of a Flickr presence at that time?
Flickr didn't exist at that time.
Oh, okay. So how did you first discover Brick Arms then?
So I actually first discovered Little Armory, which is sort of one of the very, very first custom accessory producers. And I'm pretty sure I discovered them through From Bricks to Boffins, trying to think over it in my mind, because I think he used to post on there occasionally. And that really just got me fascinated, because I was always just really, really more into the minifig and just, you know, sort of stories around them. And just that really excited me more compared to the brick. I am not, and most likely will not ever be, you know, that talented of a builder, but I really, really enjoyed the modularity and character of the Fig. And that really excited me. And the idea of like this, you know, custom stuff was just really, really cool because it was all the, you know, the sort of really detailed, well, for its time, much more detailed weaponry than what Lego was ever producing. And so that was just really, really cool to see. So picking up, you know, Little Armory, and at the time, the only other, from what I'm aware, the only other group doing injection molded accessories was Red Bean Studio. And just getting some of that stuff and just being absolutely blown away by, like, these things exist. You know, by today's standards, it's, you know, pretty primitive stuff. But, you know, for that, just the idea that these things, you know, wow, that just opened up this whole other sort of realm of possibility of bringing in outside stuff into the Lego experience. And that was pretty exciting. And I ended up, you know, even doing a couple little crappy mods myself. I think they're still floating around somewhere on Brickshelf if someone wants to get a shovel and do an expedition. But, you know, doing some little, you know, mod, some little terrible mods, some painting. But
I had never heard of Red Bean Studios before. I'm trying to find images of what they'd made.
So you actually would know them by the name that after the, I think they started, they were Hong Kong based. I forget the name of the individual who started it, but ultimately it was bought out by somebody in the US and it became Brickforge.
Oh, no way. Yeah. Wow, what do you know?
So, and actually read the forums that were associated with Red Bean Studios when Red Bean Studios kind of spun off or evolved into Brickforge, the forums that were attached to the Red Bean Studios are basically what became the minifig customization network, which is kind of the, if you want to point to ground zero of kind of like the Lego customization community, that's it.
Wow. That's a crazy backstory there. It's so difficult to find out the like really rich lore of how the custom community started unless you're talking to people who like lived it. So it's really interesting to hear about that.
When I can tell you what's kind of funny is Little Armory had been teasing doing modern weaponry for literally years. And it's kind of funny to talk to some of the younger people. I mean, for these early injection molders, you could go 2 to 3 years between releases, and we'll release really about like 6 weapons. Yeah. So he had kind of been teasing modern stuff for a while. And then when I first saw pictures of modern stuff popping up, I'm like, oh, cool. He finally did it. And then when I looked at it a little bit carefully, like, oh, Brick Arms. That's new. Is this like another guy?
What do you know? I was actually just going to ask you about what time, because obviously Brick Arms started in 2006, which is kind of mind-blowing that it was so long ago. But around what time did you first discover Little Armory and stuff like that? What year was that?
To think even years now, it would have been like probably like 2004, 2005 maybe.
All right, yeah. It's a little bit prior to Brick Arms' inception.
Yeah. 2004. Yeah, 2000, maybe a little bit earlier than that, probably 2003, 2004.
That is insane to think I was 2 while you were first starting to tinker around with this stuff. It's mind blowing.
One of the kind of interesting things, you know, talking, you know, to fans of customization who maybe haven't been in the community while as long, is just how much just it is rapidly evolved and changed over the years and taken on different forms and different individuals are as prominent or as inactive in it. It's really just been, you know, going from what it was and even the related technologies is just utterly mind-blowing to know where, like, you know, again, the idea of it even existing was so huge. And in all honesty, did not have a very good sort of relationship with the overall Lego community. And honestly, took quite a while for kind of customization and custom accessories to be, you know, received at all. To where now it's almost a de facto part of, you know, the fan community. But, you know, when it first started, you could probably count the number of people that were really, you know, out and proud about it on one hand. And you know, going today, where, you know, you can look at, you know, some sort of major vendors that for all intents and purposes anchor major LEGO fan events that build, that bring in, you know, tens of thousands of people is kind of mind blowing.
Yeah, no, we've really come a long way with it. And I feel like there's still even more room to go, especially for the people who are out here really like modding figures up, painting them, cutting them up. Whereas the third party stuff of like printed accessories is getting more well accepted. There's still a lot of room to grow.
Mm-hmm. It's neat to think about where it's been. It's neat to think about where it's going to go. You know, there's always occasionally when people will ask me, you know, what's my favorite Brick Arms accessory? You should just say whatever Will's designing next.
So your favorite accessory right now is the M240B?
It was exciting for me to see it develop and sort of to see Will's design process as he was working on it.
Yeah, no, that must be really cool to witness as it goes along. 2006 time, of course.
That to me is the exciting part, is the, you know, watching something develop, watching something change. Yeah.
All right, so around 2006, Will hops onto the scene and you're right there at ground zero, seeing him post, or the photos at least be floated around. Where'd it go from there?
I made an order for the first set of, for the first set of items. It would have been mold one. Got them in, was just really, really, really impressed with them, and ended up sending him actually a private message on the MCN, Minifig Customization Network, just to thank him. Hey, you know, I just really, really liked your product. Thank you so much. You know, da, da, da. Do you have anything else? Whatever. And he sent me back just this really, really nice message that, you know, really appreciated my kind words. He appreciated, you know, I think I'd posted a review in the thread that they had up for it and just said, you know, he appreciated that. Hey, he's working on, you know, a couple new things. He'd love to send me the designs. Would I like to take a look at them? And hey, is there anything else I'd like to see from him from the future? And it just kind of went from there.
That's amazing.
I think I mentioned I wanted to see the C96. Trying on the back of my head. I think that's what I said. And he actually said that was on the, it was near the top of the list of stuff that he wanted to do. So it worked out nicely.
That's great. That's great. Just a miscellaneous question here because it's sort of related. Has there ever been an item that you requested that Will is yet to make?
Many, 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 many things.
What's one that you still pester him about?
And I still pester him about that I can... There is one item that I have been reminding him about recently that is not entirely in my own interest to do so, and I will likely continue to do so out of a sense of obligation. And that's about all I can say.
Sounds promising. Sounds promising.
Yes. So it's, that's about it. It is on the list of, you know, he's made it very clear. I will get to it. You know, yes, there's one quote that he likes to use a lot. You know, yes, it needs to happen one day. I'll get to it when I get to it. So.
Sure. There's obviously much more beyond that first interaction with Will. So at what point did that just become a frequent occurrence of you two going back and forth, or how did your relationship grow from there?
Just emails. Honestly, it started out with those private messages and then him emailing me. Just mainly, I'm working on this. What do you think? I'm working on this. Do you have any feedback? Just going from there. Again, this was there wasn't much in terms of an actual like wider community. Again, social media was not anything what it is today. If I can reference AOL Instant Messenger for everyone out there to know, like, you know, what the primary way people were sending messages with each other. So, I mean, that there wasn't a whole lot going on. People were mostly sharing images via Brick Shelf. So, I mean, there really wasn't much of a wider community to plug in. So it was mostly just email based and going back and forth. Also, at that point, he still had his day job, which was something else. So he was still very much, you know.
Yeah, it was still very much just a part-time passion project on the side.
Yeah, I mean, still hobby. He was doing it, you know, on the nights when he could find some extra time, on the weekends sometimes. His children were all still on the younger end, so he still had a lot of responsibilities. So there was, you know, it was very much a casual, hey, when we send emails to each other, we send emails to each other.
Right. Around what time did Flickr start getting used predominantly for all the image sharing and really start to like kind of build a community?
Could not say a year, honestly, that I remember. I'd have to go back and try to find when I'd started the account, but I remember when Flickr kind of became much more of a thing and joining up, and it seemed like that was really, that coincided, or I don't know, maybe it just made it a little bit more obvious about, you know, sort of Lego, the, you know, A-foles, T-foles, like a lot of just groups, just people really, really coming together, people really sharing, people, you know, before where stuff was, you know, based around in-person lugs or maybe some lug displays or maybe like a rare kind of, I know conventions kind of existed beforehand, but then, you know, them growing and getting larger, you know, it was wrapped up in that whole that whole resurgence of, you know, social media. I think that really coincided with it. I think it's probably a big part of it in terms of people really being able to share what they were making on a much wider basis for both, you know, customization and, you know, the wider Lego fan community.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Just being able to actually find these people and know it exists as opposed to some weird back-end forum that you have to know to know.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't aware of lugs at all. And I think, you know, the wider community kind of getting away from those groups, which are absolutely fantastic, but can also be a little bit insular and maybe intimidating to outsiders. I think, you know, the way that the community opened up with the advent of social media, I think, you know, has driven a big part of how much more, you know, people are aware of it and how accessible it is.
Right, totally. That's also kind of what I really like about Instagram, besides the messaging features of Flickr, where you got to send like a whole email now. It's a lot more streamlined. But I feel like it actually has the ability to reach a wider audience and sort of display it for the world, as opposed to Flickr, where like you'd have that random post that gets explored, and then there's just a bunch of rando people in the comments like, wow, amazing composition. And it just has nothing to do with it. And that's not really reaching people outside of the community. Now you could have a real impact to sort of grow what's going on.
I would say I'm trying to think, Will in one email then mentioned, hey, you know, he was going to start up online forums at that point really, you know, exploded in terms of, you know, those being hubs of, you know, Lego fan engagement. And that's where he asked me, hey, I'd like to start up an online forum. Would you be interested in being an admin for me? And I said, you know, that sounds wonderful. And then did that for a little while. And that's when he sent me the message, hey, you know, I'd love you to be a part of the business and act as an official spokesman for the company online. And I was happy to do that.
That's amazing. You speaking about it this way, I had never really considered it as a very official title and sort of job thing. Was it ever like on a payroll sort of basis, or?
No formal contract has ever existed between me and Will. Yes, there was a time when I was compensated for my activities that were done on his behalf.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I figured just like the protos and everything were payment.
For everything I have been involved with, I have always felt both well compensated and deeply appreciated by Will. And I am, you know, am extremely grateful and humbled by that experience.
Yeah, totally. The Brick Arms forums are really something. I wish there was a way, like I've tried to look at it on the Wayback Machine. And it still sort of exists, but it's only really the text. And I want to be able to find all the mods that are there, and like people will link to Flickr posts, but they're just totally dead links and all this and that. There's some like wild, wild modifications that were going on at that time, just way ahead of the thinking. And really, I don't know. I think there's just a lot of hidden gems there, and there's no way to really recover them at this point.
Especially in the first, I would say the first iteration of the Brick Arms forums, that was just some really, really exciting, really, really incredible times. Like you said, I mean, was really in a lot of ways ahead of its time. And I think really kind of set the standard and really kind of it set the pace for kind of customization. I think it really brought a lot of people together in terms of customization that maybe, as much as it was focused on brick arms, it also brought a lot of people doing really cool stuff with painting, with people doing stuff with minifig modification itself, with, you know, using decals in an interesting way, with, you know, as printing was just starting to become a thing, using different printed parts. And I think that combined together with the sort of, there was a lot of outside media interest in brick arms at the time for a couple different reasons. And it just, it brought, I think, a lot of, you know, it, I think it helped solidify customization, especially minifig customization, as a part of the community.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a really interesting connection that alongside brick arms expanding and getting more people interested into customization, that it would obviously just naturally, you know, be a part of people trying to push the minifigure form as well and start painting it, chopping it up, decaling. Was there much really going on in terms of just straight up minifigure customization before brick arms? Like, I'm sure there's obviously fringe cases of it, but.
No, I mean, there were people doing a lot of, decaling was really big. There were a lot of people doing stuff with decals. There was a lot of people doing stuff with resin printing. I would say looking at customization over the long haul, the trend has been away from sort of one-off, high labor-intensive sort of applications going up to, you know, something more where it's, on the one hand, you've got the same thing where people are doing, you know, very, very just detailed, intensive work. Also going into, you know, things like printing, things like injection molded stuff, which is basically ready to mix and match out of the box.
Yeah, certainly. I find it interesting that you actually mentioned resin printing being a part of the scene at the time as well. It feels like that's more of like a recent development. What was it at the time that people were resin printing?
Well, this is resin casting, not resin printing.
Ah, right. Okay. Yeah. No, that makes a lot more sense. The casting was huge back then with like Hazel and stuff like that.
Yeah, there were a couple different people doing some really interesting resin casted stuff that I still have in my collection, which are just, they're interesting, but again, the issue with it was there's so much variation from individual item to individual. Yeah, can you hear me? Yeah, so I mean, what I was saying, there's so much variation with resin casting from, you know, individual item to individual item based on the process. It was, you know, a little bit, you know, you'd order something and then, you know, it'd arrive and you have to, you know, sand it down a bit to get the fit to work, or a detail wouldn't be as well casted. So it'd be a little bit disappointing. You don't get, I mean, nearly the kind of consistency with, you know, injection molded stuff. And even, you know, looking like it matches the look and feel of a fig, you know, is really big. So it's...
Oh yeah, certainly. The injection molding is without a doubt the gold standard for it all. Yep. What do you think about, well, now that resin printing is part of the topic, what do you think about the use of that technology lately? It's become a really, I don't know, it's really on the come up. A lot of people are popping up with resin printers, especially because they're easy to get into. It's a low sort of buy-in. How do you feel about stuff like that? Have you actually got any hands-on experience with any of those products?
I'm trying to think of if anything recently, not in the past several years. And I know that some of the, you know, I know that the technology behind it has certainly improved. At the same time, just looking at images online, like you said, the idea for me is does it look and feel like it matches the minifigure? And to me, 3D printed stuff, even, you know, there is some gorgeous paint of it, there is some gorgeous work on it, but there's still that gulf between injection molded ABS and resin printed stuff.
Sure. Yeah, there's definitely a gap that has to be crossed there to get it up to par, but the gap's closing quick. I don't know what can be done to really like finalize that little gap where it's like, okay, obviously it won't be plastic, it's this resin, but like quality visually is going to be on par. And I don't know what has to change to get there, but I think just the natural progression of things might be, there might be a future really soon that resin printing's just nearly on par with injection molded stuff. It's incredible.
No, it's going from, you know, what it was, you know, a couple of years ago to what people are able to do now is just, again, you know, it's mind blowing.
Without a doubt. At what point during all this did kind of protos start getting a name for themselves and becoming a driving factor and currency in the Brick Arms fandom?
I think some of the earlier events, I gave out a few and people were kind of interested. I would say as those then got out, and especially things like Flickr, and people were posting them, and this sort of mystique of exclusivity, sort of built up around them. I'd say that's when things really started to kick in. And in all honesty, I was sort of completely unaware of this underground economy that sort of built around them. You know, I would just literally give them away as fast as I could at events, just because I enjoyed doing it. People really enjoyed having them. Finding out a lot of people were then turning around and selling them for, you know, what they could do was somewhat disheartening. I could certainly understand their, you know, reasons for doing so. But at the same time, it was a little bit, disheartening is probably the best word for it. And I know, especially on Will's side, it was a little bit, you know, the same sort of thing as sort of it was given as a gift. And it's a little bit backhanded to then go and sell it. But then again, both of us sort of appreciate, you know, that's, you know, it's a convention exclusive. It's, you know, there is that, you know, collector's market. This is going to exist. And I think over the years, as things have evolved, I think, you know, Will's found a nice spot where things like Brick Arms Workshop Wonders through Kip's Graphics, some of the limited edition stuff, hand injected stuff that he does for some other vendors for some things. I know he's done some stuff for Citizen Brick. I forget who he's. I know he's done some other custom items for some other people too. So I think, you know, finding a way to get those items to market in a way that's a little bit more equitable, I think, has been good for everybody.
Yeah, no, certainly. And I think once Workshop Wonders came around, it really revitalized the prototype community and brought it to a newer sort of, not, I don't know if generation would be the right word, but kind of a lot of those like sort of Citizen Brick collectors and other like sections of the custom world who weren't really interested in it at the time are now getting into Brick Arms protos. That's pretty nice.
Well, especially they were only distributed at conventions. So it became this, you know, this very large gulf between, you know, the people who could attend to the events and the people who could not. And I think that built up a lot of sort of, there was certainly a large demand and interest of them. And a lot of people who were not able to attend events felt very frustrated about that, which I can, again, completely understand.
A very understandable. And it's exactly why people would then on the other end be selling it, because there's a lot of people who want it so bad but can't be there. So
yep,
it's all part of the territory, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Is there a chance of Brick Arms fan polls ever coming back?
Do you mean the fan choice?
Yeah, fan choice.
As far as I'm aware, Will doesn't have any plans to bring that back. I'd say, you know, it worked very well in the time for the Brick Arms forums when it was, you know, a smaller group of, you know, very dedicated people. And especially when, you know, it was a little bit harder to get, you know, wider feedback. But now with, you know, this worldwide chain of resellers, I'd say Will is much, much more dialed in to, you know, what markets across the world are interested in. You know, when I can ask him about things today, he has a very, very granular sense of, you know, what builders are interested in seeing from him and which items they are interested in placing orders in. So I really love the fan choice. It was really, really fun and really great to do. Personally, I would love to see it come back. Again, I'm not associated directly with the Brick Arms business anymore, so I can't speak to anything that Will, you know, might or might not have planned. But it's more difficult to me see that fitting in today. That said, I mean, obviously there are, you know, the resellers that exist. So whether or not something could happen through them, I could see that as being something. But again, that would be the reseller needing to work through Will, needing to find an arrangement that worked for both of them, and then moving forward with it. But, and I can't, again, I can't speak to any specific knowledge of plans around that.
No, yeah, no, that makes sense. They were certainly a lot of fun, but it as you describe it, it makes a lot of sense that it was kind of a product of the time and it was a really useful tool for then, but now there's a lot less need for it. That said, I would still love to see it again.
Yep.
Those are really, really great fun.
Yeah, no, it was fun. I was the one who had put together the list of items. And it was actually always really, really fun trying to pick out, you know, a couple items where there'd be some just, I know that I was listing several that, you know, would excite people and where it would be an actual difficult choice for someone to only pick one. And I've got, you know, numerous messages of, you know, why are you making me choose between, you know, whatever.
I'm still waiting for the double barreled. I'm still waiting.
This is a statement you are not the first person to make to me.
I'm sure.
Yes, that is very well. It is very, very well received. I assure you, it has been passed on.
Thank you. The community thanks you. I found out about the Brick Arms blow dryer from a comment you made in the Brick Arms Discord. Is there anything you want to talk about with that? Because that is so, so funny.
It pretty much is what it is. I want to say it was like the first or second April Fool's Day of the Brick Arms forums. Somebody on the moderation staff made a joke about, you know, you should post, you know, whatever. And somehow been too many years to say who said hair dryer, and then that popped up.
It'd honestly be a killer item. The design looked great. I don't know if Friends, like Lego Friends, has made anything like of a blow dryer. They must have, but I think this holds the cake as the best one.
I don't think so. I'll have to double check. I know Lego actually way back for, what was it, Scala, did a really like massively oversized one, but I don't think they've.
Well, there's still a hole in the market.
Yeah, I don't think they've done one for Friends. I'd have to double check on that.
I'm looking it up. It looks like there's a couple designs that they've made in the past.
Okay.
They kind of sort of look like from that sort of Belleville sort of era.
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah,
they don't compare to the Brick Arms one though. I love the little button. It just makes it work.
It's a pretty, I mean, for a gag item, I'm sure he did not invest any significant amount of time into. It is a, you know, it is a fun little goof. And, you know, it's neat that people can rediscover it every couple of years as something that exists and be amused by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it keeps coming back. Moving on into a little more of the stuff you had going on during your time, like really active in the community back then on Flickr. What people probably know you most for is all your travels and having your sigfig in just really extravagant places and on your dinner meals that are looking delicious. What's your favorite picture that you've taken of your sigfig?
In terms of when people talk about, you know, most interesting places that they've taken a picture with a minifigure, I have yet to find someone who can beat my in the ocular cavity of a human skull.
Okay, so I'm glad you brought that up because somebody asked a question about this and I had not a single clue what they were talking about. So to read off their question, do you feel like there's a haunting on your sigfig after the skull incident?
I can only hope so.
Fair enough. All right, well, you heard it here. Maybe there is a little bit of a haunting on the sigfig. Have you actually ever misplaced the sigfig and had to recreate it?
No. That is the original one that has been with me since the beginning.
Good, 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 good. It wouldn't be the same if you had to recreate him, honestly.
Yeah, no, it's I've never been really comfortable posing for pictures. So when I knew that things were going to be taking me overseas, I tried to think about what's a fun kind of thing I can do to, you know, be a part of pictures, but not. And it seemed like something fun. And then I started doing it. It just, you know, it became just a lot of fun. It became, you know, really a neat game on trips to try to find interesting angles, to try to find, you know, ways of posing it in front of things that, you know, sort of kept the fig in perspective, that showcased the locations well, that, you know, sort of made for dynamic composition. So it's been fun.
Totally. No, yeah, that's a great solution, having, you know, not wanting to take the photos, but you need a little memento of your time there to be like, hey, I was there. And my minifig was too.
Yeah.
Do you still bring them around when you travel?
Yep.
Awesome. Do you think there will be a day when you don't bring them around to travel anymore?
It's certainly something I still enjoy doing. I find it difficult to think of a reason why I would stop doing so. Certainly right now, travel is much, much more limited than what it was in years past. That said, at least as I will at least start to travel a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, something that I'd certainly like to keep going. And it's certainly something that I still get, you know, a lot of joy from. And it's nice to see that, you know, it's wonderful to hear that so many people, you know, enjoy the pictures as well. And, you know, it really, you know, it's, I can't see myself stopping anytime soon.
That's great. Yeah. It's just it's really wholesome just to see you traveling around and your little minifigure in tow. It's great.
It's also fun too. I mean, a lot of these are more, you know, sort of tourist locations, and a lot of people, once they realize what I'm doing, really, really get into it and get, you know, really excited by it, and they're kind of curious about it. So it's fun.
Right. Going back a little bit, also kind of still on conversation with traveling. You've been to a few events way back in the past. Do you have any plans to come to any more in the future?
Right now, traveling, especially traveling internationally, is an impossibility for me. So unfortunately, even as events are starting up again in the US, they're just not an option for me. I would absolutely love to make it back to an event, especially a US event that I'd attended before. But, you know, at this point, it's, you know, very much in the hands of the whims of fate.
Sure. Yeah. I'm just happy to hear that, you know, one day I'm sure things will clear up. You'll have the opportunity to be back out there, and your willingness to go will be great.
Yes.
You should definitely come to Virginia. I'm not biased there, but you should certainly be coming to Brick Fair, Virginia.
I would say of the three major U.S. events, I would say the two most likely possibilities would be Brick Fair, Virginia, just because it would be the relatively easiest for me to travel to, or BrickCon in terms of being able to, you know, meet up with Will and have that experience of, you know, being in the workshop and injecting again, which that, you know, I have really just, those are some of the really, really fond memories for me. So, you know, both would have their, you know, strong points.
Right. Also, somebody else asked a question that I didn't know the meaning behind. They were asking about, how did you get the name of Black Lodge Customs, or just to the effect of, like, what does that mean to you, or something like that? I don't even have a slightest clue what it's referring to.
I'm sorry, you'll have to repeat that again. I'm very hard of hearing.
What?
Again, I did not hear a single word you said. Please repeat yourself.
Can you hear me? Was this a reference?
No, I'm... this. Yes, it is a reference to anyone who is dick-beginning.
Well, then I think... I hope that answers the question for the person. I feel like on that note, I think... I think I've hit all the things I'd love to discuss with you as of right now. It's been a real pleasure, Badger.
Okay.
Getting to talk to you.
Yeah, it's been lovely.
Despite, you know, the 15-second delays, we were able to hold, I think, a great conversation. And yeah, it genuinely was a pleasure to get to talk to you here.
Well, it was a pleasure to talk to you too. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come on. I really, really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Any last words?
Dutch Schultz.
And there you go. You heard it here from the man for the man himself. All right. Have a great night, Badger. Thank you.
Thanks. You too. Have a good evening.
Bye. Well done. That wraps up this episode of the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on, Badger. It was a real pleasure getting to talk to you. If you enjoyed the podcast, please share with a friend or leave us a review on iTunes. I want to give a huge thank you once again to Nate's Minifigs for sponsoring the podcast. You can check them out at natesminifigs.com and use promo code BM4 at checkout for 15% off. Also got to give a huge, huge thank you to all of our patrons on patreon.com. We have Seth, Mike, Justin, Francisco, Dashbricks, JBricks, PK Custom Lego, Milo, Jay, Minibigs, Thomas, and Mango Ride and Mongo. I cannot thank you guys enough for your continued support, even though there hasn't been many Patreon episodes, but look out, the custom torsos I got printed by Eclipse Graphics finally came in, so I'm going to be sending those out to a few of you, and they're also going to be available soon to purchase, so yeah, thank you all so much. Make sure to come back in 2 weeks for the next episode with, who's the guest? Don't know, haven't got him booked yet, but we'll figure that out. See you soon.